Welcome to the Hospitality Maverick podcast with me, Michael Tinkser. We at Hospitality Mavericks are here to inspire leaders to create heart-centered and profitable businesses from the inside out, the kind that both employees and customers love and support. Thanks to BizSimply for sponsoring this episode as our show partner, and BizSimply is the all-in-one HR, workforce management, rotor operations software designed and built by hospitality experts to make every shift run like clockwork. And we join forces to help the industry find new ways to become even more innovative in how we lead our people, how we operate, to how we grow our businesses, to how we serve our customers. Together, we want to share strategies and tools that can make the industry thrive long term, not just survive.
If depression can be looked at as sort of a, some people describe it as a hole that they fall into. Well, what if we could, you know, put a little like mesh covering over the hole, you know? So like when you fell in, you did go on a bit, but it bounced you back out. What if we built a ladder on the side of that hole so you could fall deeply into that depression, but there was a ladder already there to climb out of?
In this episode, we are joined by Dan Simons, the visionary co-founder and CEO of Farmers Restaurant Group. Dan has been on the show before, and I recommend you to check out episode 167 for a deeper dive into Farmers Restaurant Groups. They are real mavericks, and they're building something very special over there. Today's conversation is different, but it navigates a crucial and often overlooked aspect within business: mental health. We're going to be talking about it in the context of hospitality and the wider workplace. Dan opens about how he have seen mental health struggles impact businesses and their results and many people's life. He shares some of his observation and personal experience dealing with this through a very difficult time during the pandemic and post-pandemic. He also reflects on his own journey and shares some of his own personal encounters and how he had used these crises to shape himself as a leader and business owner today. And he also talks about how you actually get the balance right between, you know, pushing hard enough, but also making sure you recharge and actually you are 100% there in the present moment now. We also talk about how you as a leader can manage yourself better, and Dan shares some practical tools and routines and practices he's been using to keep his own mental health in place. One of them will be breathing, and he will talk about how that actually transforms his way of dealing with difficult things. Dan also shares a number of books you should be reading. These are pivotal in my view, and it's books on mental health and leadership. If you like today's episode, it will mean the world to me if you leave a review of the show on either our website, Apple Podcasts, or Spotify. The better the reviews, the better the guest, and ultimately, the better the learning is for you. Now, join us for a conversation that's not just about running a successful business, but nurturing a healthy, vibrant community within it. Be Maverick. I've said it before, but I feel sometimes there's nothing better than bringing guests back on the show. And I was just talking with Dan, that's the guest today, before we started. And actually, I can't believe it when I looked into it yesterday. It was almost two years since we did the last conversation, 2022 in July. It came out, but I'm quite certain we did it in May. And wow, a lot of things has happened since. But we'll probably touch on that. We're not going to talk about, I think we talked a bit about the pandemic last time. We're not going to talk about pandemic and how we got out of it. But Dan from Founding Farmers, the founder, co-founder and CEO at Founding Farmers, and I had a really interesting conversation about slowing down to make better business decisions was like the core conversation, but also he gave a really good insight into what the business is about. So you want to know more about that, go back and visit episode 167. It's full of golden nuggets, has really good feedback. I think it was one of the most downloaded in 2022, as I can remember as well. So with that said, Dan, welcome back. I'm super excited that we could sit down and have a second conversation.
Michael, thanks for having me. You know, in our business of restaurants, there's nothing that matters more than does someone want to return? And so the fact that you invited me back, I felt great. Thank you, because that's the thing, right? Repeat guests in our business is what matters. So thanks for having me back. I'm looking forward to a good chat.
Yeah, I love that. That was a very good angle. And actually, it's the audience that have asked you back, because sometimes we ask the audience to our newsletters and the super fans, and we ask who should we bring back in 2024, and you were one of them. So you definitely added value to their life, and they are the diners of this show, if you could say something, stay in that analogy. But today we're going to take a different focus. It would be great if you, in a second, just could talk a bit about what is Farmers Restaurant Group and what your purpose is. So just people could just can hang up on this, because it fits really well about how your focus is on people as well. But we're going to, something you've been talking very actively on in the, I followed you since before we met the first time and we had the interview, but I've seen you have this accelerating focusing on mental health. And I think there's a mental health crisis in general in most, definitely Western societies, I see it, and definitely in the restaurant industry. I hear that from more and more leaders, both in the top all the way out to the front line. There's challenges of all kinds of things. There's now starting to become, you know, real, has to be a business focus. And I think one of the main reasons that I read in some place where people didn't show up to work, it was like some insights were done here in the UK, was actually because they didn't feel well, like they had mental health issues, so therefore they didn't turn up to work. So before we jump into that, Dan, it'd be great, just give the listeners that hasn't heard about you and the Farmers Restaurant Group before, just a little insight into what you guys do and what kind of footprint you have.
Sure. So I'm a restaurateur. We have 7 restaurants. An 8th is under construction. Most are in and around Washington, D.C., Maryland, Virginia, Pennsylvania. They're large restaurants, 150 or 200 employees per restaurant. We also have our own distillery, our own bakery, and now we've started a catering and events company. So all rolled up, it's about 1,400, maybe 1,450 employees. And we do about $100 million US dollars in annual revenue. What makes the company unique, what for me makes being part of the company special, is our ownership structure and where our profits go. And so our largest partner and investor is a group of American family farmers. And then we have lots of individual American family farmers as investors. The two restaurateurs are myself and my operating partner, Michael. And then we really work on behalf and work with these American family farmers. They invest, they get a larger share of the food dollar. Some of them supply. We work on vertical integration. They own a couple 18-wheelers. We run our own food from the Midwest in the U.S. to the East Coast, so we can really what we call unbundle the supply chain. Better value for the farmers, better value for the diner, take the profit and frankly the chemicals and the yuck out of the middle. And we cook from scratch. We buy ingredients. We make yummy food. At the end of the day, it's a restaurant. So it's about, great food and great service and loving the diner and loving the tea. But the farmer ownership model is what makes us really unique.
Yeah, and I think also it's unique how you're trying to close the loop, taking the middle man out. And also you said take the nasties out of food, which is like a bigger, bigger concern out there as well. Where's my food coming from and what it's doing to me as I'm eating it as well. And I think I haven't seen, and you might can tell there's other models like that, but I haven't seen similar things roll out, maybe in small scale, but not in the scale that you guys are doing it in.
Yeah, I haven't seen anyone doing it at this scale. I do get phone calls and I always try to help folks. If there's a smaller farm organization or an individual farmer, I helped a farmer in West Africa who was just looking to set up a street side farm and got connected to me through the World Farm Organization. And so there's smaller scale stuff out there. My hope is long term that we're a good role model and we show people the profit and the value created and how all the stakeholders can win. I'd love lots. If there were a ton of restaurants with our model, I'd be thrilled.
Yeah, no, I think, again, what the really interesting thing is that, you know, you also are showing that actually hospitality can make a difference when it comes to changing some of the big challenges in the world, you know, public health crisis, as well as a farming crisis. So I think go back and listen to that episode, look up your website, and there's lots of content out there on you guys. But what I really wanted to talk with you today is about, you know, mental health, you know, and you talk a bit about like, yeah, you can't, you have a balance sheet, you can't not talk about mental health in your business. It's like as important, because without the strong mental health or resilience, you can call it almost, then there's no really strong balance sheet. Can you talk a bit about what your observation is and why you see this agenda really needs to be talked about? Because it's very rare you see a CEO slash founder go out and talk about this subject and other related mental health things that has such an important, it's like, it's exactly a banner, I would say, you're walking under.
It's clear to me that this is a business topic. So I'm grateful you're creating the conversation. I think it's important for people to hear about. There's lots of business topics that are important for folks that are in business, owning, running, working in, that we should talk about. For me, mental health is just health. That seems like a really sensible, normal thing to talk about. And we wouldn't avoid topics like profit or accounts receivable or accounts payable or food cost or supply chain inefficiencies. You'd never run a business and not talk about those things. Every single company in the world has one thing in common. At least one human being works in it, you know, until the robots take over. Business is something fueled by humans. And so mental health and talking about it, this is a profit topic. This is a business topic. And I'm a capitalist. I think of myself as a conscious capitalist. I think about, you know, a multi-stakeholder approach to business, and profit is one of those stakeholders, and investors are one of those stakeholders. So are the employees. And then actually separate from just the employee, I view the health of the employee as a stakeholder. So I appreciate your question, because I think if we're talking about it, if we're listening to this conversation, the first most valuable step is to frame this as a business conversation. I'm talking about results on the P&L. That's what we're talking about today. And we happen to be talking about the P&L's got a lot of lines on it. And one of those lines that you just can't happen to see and still until you start to look for it is mental health. So that's my general paradigm for how I think of it.
Let me just stay in the analogy around the P&L, because I'm visualizing the P&L now, and then I'm thinking down, and then you come down to your people cost will often be labor, you would call that, or training would be on the P&L. So do you see that lies under there, or is it actually a separate line? Is that how you see it in your business, or visualize it?
I visualize it woven throughout the P&L. So when we have a food cost problem, I think about the humans involved in managing the food cost. I think about the products that they manage. The problem is not going to be with the product. The problem is going to be with the humans relating to the product. So I think about the chefs and the managers, and the receivers, the purchasers relating to the food cost. Then I think about, how are they performing? Are they trained? Do they have the expertise? Are they motivated? Are they inspired? And are they optimally well? Business is just a sport. You show up each day and you perform your sport. No different than if you're in London playing football, if you're, you know, in America playing American football, the playbook is obvious. Everybody knows the intent, win. what's the difference between the winners and the losers? It's not actually talent. The talent level is incredibly close amongst elite performers. The difference in the win and lose is how do they do that day? And what determines that? Their overall wellness. So if your knee hurts or your ankle's a little bit off, or you're mentally distracted, or your dog got hit by a car, or your spouse just said that they want to get divorced, or your kid just got a diagnosis. I mean, I'll tell you, the way to beat Messi is make something, get someone in his family so ill that he would have to worry about it. And I wouldn't obviously wish that on anyone, but just to emphasize the point, if I want to hit the food cost, I got to start with the wellness of my people. It is so obvious, Michael, that I'm motivated to talk about it in this language of business people, because people can hear this. It's like, oh, I want to hit the better food cost. I want better guest satisfaction scores. I want better results on the P&L. I want more productivity. Super. Let's work on getting our people faster, stronger, smarter, better. And the number one thing that affects that is their cognitive function. We all have a computer upstairs. It's in our skull. Yeah. That's what we run on. We produce our own electricity. It's amazing. So why wouldn't we want to clean and defrag and optimize the computer that runs our performance? So I hope I didn't babble on too long there, but you know I get excited about the topic because I just want to lay it out. I'm not a mental health practitioner. I don't run an NGO. I'm not in the advocacy business. I'm a founder of a restaurant company, and this is the one of the most valuable things that I can work on to create value for all my students.
And it's quite interesting. As you were talking, I was thinking about that. I was reading Ken Blanchard's book, The 1 Minute Manager, again recently. I read that book once a year. I have 10 books I always read once a year. I'm a bit obsessive about that because I really want to get them under my skin. And I got that book when I was 20 something, and that's some years ago by a manager that said, this is the most important business book you ever read from a managing people. And he says in this book, you know, people who feel good about themselves produce good results. And it goes back to exactly what you said. Like, if people feel great, they will solve these challenges. If it's the labor cost, it's the food waste cost, guest complaints, they will solve them much better. So therefore, exactly your job to make sure they feel good about themselves or help them to give them the tools so they can manage that situation better.
And yet,
yes.
Even as obvious as this is, yes, it's hard to do. So that's why I could look around and I just picked up Blanchard's book. It's just on my desk, right?
There you go.
It's the new 1 Minute Manager. And yeah, so this is an unpaid testimonial, right? It's not sponsored. But there's a lot, Michael, that is clear, obvious, and known to humans about what gets the best outcomes, the outcomes that we want, and yet we don't do it. So I acknowledge that there's a lot of roadblocks. We are the roadblocks. The humans are the roadblocks, right? I am the problem. I don't do everything that is best for me that I know. And so it's worth studying why. And that's also where the mental health topic comes in, right? And people can, you know, why did I eat that if I didn't want to? Why did I say that if I regret saying it? Why didn't I say that when I wish I spoke up? Why was I so anxious that I didn't do my best? Why do I ruminate and now have these negative thoughts about yesterday such that it disrupts my performance tomorrow? These are really good questions. And as we get good at asking them and answering them for ourselves and our colleagues and those around us, we perform better.
What is it like? Because this is a really good segue into this conversation. And I think I couldn't have dreamed about it in a better way. And I love the way you phrase it as like a business challenge in a way, like any other challenge you have. This is another thing you need to balance on the scales and get right. But because it's very interesting, because I was thinking as you were talking again there, I was thinking about, I was at a conference earlier in the week, and I can't remember what it was, a panel or a session I participated in where we talked about the most important thing, and I think it was more guest focus, is that how we make people feel when they come to a restaurant. So if our people feel terrible, they probably also will struggle giving that hospitality experience that you want to give them, and because that's what decides if they come again. In principle, the product can be mediocre. It can go bad. The product, of course, has to be good, but that can go wrong sometimes. But the way you deal with that and how they experience the thing is really the key thing why they come again and again.
I love when people emphasize this point that the guest, the diner, other people, you know, they won't remember what you said and did. They'll remember how you make them feel. And I think that might be Maya Angelou or some other, you know, brilliant thinker.
Yeah.
I'd go beyond that, or maybe the prequel to that is, if you're thinking that it's valuable about how you make people feel, you must first think about how you feel.
Mm.
It is really hard to give love if you can't receive love. It's really hard to receive love if you can't give it if you can't receive it. And all of a sudden you're like, wow, why are we talking about love in a business setting? Well, if we want to affect the diners, right? But we as the individual that's working to serve the diner has some version of loathing something about ourselves, or, you know, wishing we were different. You can't hide that. You know, our vibe, the way we affect other people, I'm just convinced it starts with how we feel about ourselves. So, yes, people will remember how we make them feel. So we sure as hell should remember how we make ourselves feel.
And I guess also when we touch on this, like really, it's people think, what is this about business too? But actually love is the key ingredient, the most valuable thing in the world. Like that's, you know, nothing can replace love, and love can be defined on different levels. It can be love to your nearest one, but it can also just be general giving love to the world and make the world a better place and love life, as you said. And I think it was really interesting what you said. We'd often forget this. If we can't give love, we can't receive love, and it goes the other way around as well. It just made me think about, you know, when you can feel you don't get the love when you go to a specific place to eat or get service in a retail setting or whatever kind of business you get, you can just feel that this is so transactional. You just want my money. You don't really want to give me anything else. There's no love behind what you do. There's no craft behind. So it all ties together in a way. Can you give a couple of, you know, because now we're talking about hospitality, some observation of some of the challenges you see now is going on. There was the pandemic. It was challenging for everyone. But now we like moved out of that. We moved into a new era. We talked a bit about before. The fundamentals are often the same. Business dynamics is then much more intense than they have been before. What are some of the challenges you see in your world, in your business?
First, just to sort of manage myself and reflect on your question and answer it in a way that I would be pleased with, I have to say, whatever the challenges are in business, I'm grateful we have them. It means we're still in business. It means we're still alive. And so business isn't supposed to be easy. And I can confirm, at least for us, it is most certainly not easy. It isn't getting easier. It continues to shift. You know, in America, we have a huge immigration challenge and problem. We have a serious political problem that our left wing and our right wing have gone totally bonkers. There used to be a center. There were business people in the center in both political parties. They really seem to have lost their voice or lost their way or lost, I guess, their constituency. But I know their constituency is still here. So the, you know, the hospitality business in the U.S. has its challenges right now with legislative trends or strange regulations on the industry. I would say the inflationary pressures are settling down. But as we know, wages are sticky. Wages never go back down. And so what concerns me, I don't mind rising wages. If people earn more money, that's great. But when everything is costing them more, they don't necessarily have a net positive. And I do worry about how high prices are getting. We're lucky with a farmer-owned restaurant and an unbundling of the supply chain. You know, when you make your own vodka, you can pass that value on to the guest. When you have your own bakery, your bread is really not only way better, but way less expensive, more complicated to do. So those are some of the pressures we face. And then, you know, I think the burden is on the entrepreneur and the business leader. You got to innovate. There's no real point in talking about how hard it is now or saying it used to be easier or complaining about the younger generation. That's just what old business leaders who are past their prime talk about. I'm an old business leader, I feel like, at almost 54 years old, but I don't want to be past my prime. So I'm not going to complain about how hard it is or what's difficult or blame the youth. No, I'm going to try to innovate and learn and get them teaching me and figure out new stuff. And it's not supposed to be easy.
And do you then feel that, like, for your own angle as the business leader, that the pressure is higher on your mental health than it's been before, or is just a different pressure?
So for me as an individual, me personally, the pressure is less because I am learning to see and feel the pressure differently. I could make a case that the pressure is more, the risk is higher, the pitfalls are deeper and sharper. But though that's out of my control, what is in my control and what I am working on is my own journey of how I stay well. Because it's really my own wellness, the wellness of my team, that is what defines how hard the hill is to climb. You know, if you're really out of shape, right? I'll just use the physical example. Well, then that hill, boy, that's a huge obstacle. We've got to get the team to run to the top and the whole team is really out of shape. Boy, that hill's huge. Well, if the whole team is in great shape, that same exact hill is not necessarily that hard to run to the top of. So I look for the things for myself that keep me well, so that regardless of the size of the hill that appears, I'm at least in the best shape, wellness, leadership, fitness that I can be to tackle it, to get to the top of that problem and overcome it and hopefully find some stable ground where it doesn't always have to feel so hard. And then you get ready for the next challenge.
I love to work with the team over at BizSimple because they are always striving to get better. 1% better every day. So I had to share this with you because BizSimple have launched a new blogcast, which highlights some of their favorite Hospitality Maverick podcast episodes over time. And if you're new or a hardcore super fan of the show, this is a perfect opportunity to catch up with some of the standout episodes from our massive back catalog. The BizSimple team has and will be extensively transcribing interesting moments from each episode while providing some new insights on our brilliant guest, the Mavericks. There's already some great write-ups with Mavericks like Chef Chantel Nicholson and the co-founder of Singerman's Community of Businesses, Ari Weinschwein. Find them at bizsimply.com/blog and click blogcast on the right side menu. Enjoy.
Well, what is it like? We just stay with you, Dan. What is it like? Do you have like some top hacks that you do? We all have our own algorithm, I call it, you know, like your priming exercise or whatever that keeps you in balance or whatever people call the meditations or whatever they do. But you have like a top three hacks you do every day to ensure that balance and keep yourself going.
So I took a deep breath as you asked me that question. I don't know if my audio picked it up. So yes, I breathe and I focus on my breathing a lot. The neuroscience has taught us that it's not just deep breaths. Deep breaths are great. But for example, two inhales immediately. I don't know if you can hear it on the audio, but it's right. So the first inhale and then followed by a second exhale helps the parasympathetic nervous system. And so I'm on a journey to learn about breathing and what that does for me. And it's pretty remarkable. And I can give you another example of when I use it. So before I go on stage or any time that I know that I could be feeling anxious, I work on my breathing with some specific methodology. And then after I do something that has me amped up or ramped up, which could be being on stage, it could be leading a team meeting, it could be working out in the gym, anything that really has me going at an intense level, when that finishes, I stop, I set a timer on my phone for 6 minutes, and I lay down or I sit down and I do box breathing, 8 seconds in, 8 seconds hold, 8 seconds out, 8 seconds hold, 8 seconds in. So the timing is like the shape of a box. And I do that for 6 minutes. Sometimes I do it for 4 minutes because that's all I have. Sometimes I do it for 3 minutes. Sometimes I don't do it because I'm in a rush, but I should do it. So I'm not perfect with my hacks and my tips, but what I have learned, and it's helped me to get the vocabulary. Look, I'm not a practitioner. I'm not a neuroscientist. Mm. I'm just a guy trying to figure out how to operate myself. And we were always told that the human body doesn't come with a user manual, but it kind of does now. You listen to the neuroscientists and you weave in the neuroscience research into the daily life of business leadership. There's a lot to apply. And so for me, that vocabulary, the sympathetic nervous system, the parasympathetic nervous system, and understanding that dysregulation, I definitely reached a point several years ago where I was really dysregulated.
Mm.
I was always go, go, go. I didn't feel stressed. I just thought I was a beast. Mm. It had served me well and built my career. And, you know, I could tackle anything. And I learned that isn't true, that the stress is in the subconscious or below the surface, manifests in different ways. And I have needed to accept that I need to slow down so that I can go faster.
Mm.
And then, you know, go faster when I need to and then slow down. So that has been a big, I really apply that. You know, I used to be able to like work all the time and I just didn't think there was any downside. And now I realize I can do better work. My productivity, my performance level, you know, 15 minutes of high intensity interval training can get me more valuable than a different kind of 45-minute workout. So using the time from a productivity standpoint, weaving into neuroscience, those are the things that I'm really working on in my journey that are really helping me.
That's so interesting. The breathing bit, I've also got into that for the last couple of years. And it's exactly, you know, as you start managing that and using it for your transitions during the day, you feel the difference over time, but you can feel the difference in the end of the day. You're not as wired up as you often can be, especially in a day where you have high intensity, a lot of meetings but you need to create the buffer. I think we talked about it just before the the conversation start. If we then go on your team, Dan, what have you seen? Like, what have you observed? What have you dealt with of these mental health challenges? Because I can see more CEOs, founders I talk with, they have challenges themselves, but then also they need to manage what's going on in their business. And that's a people business. And often there's people with challenges and they need to get more involved than ever because that's, they say, I have to because else they will burn out in a way. So they almost see it like, if I don't do that, I will lose them. And I'll be, so they almost see it like in the last resort, they don't see it as a business practice as you talk about. But it'd be interesting to see how you've seen this involving you in your restaurants and how you dealt with it as a restaurant group.
It works really well when you make it a first resort instead of a last resort.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's harder to fix a broken leg than prevent breaking your leg. It's harder to treat, you know, OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, that has really spiraled to the point where it's preventing someone from working. It's much harder at that point to treat, still always treatable, I think, than it is to catch it early and get someone into treatment. And so if depression can be looked at as sort of a, some people describe it as a hole that they fall into. Well, what if we could, you know, put a little like a mesh covering over the hole, you know? So like when you fell in, you did go on a bit, but it bounced you back out. What if we built a ladder on the side of that hole so you could fall deeply into that depression, but there was a ladder already there to climb out of? So it worked for me. It starts at the top. You got to normalize the conversation. Let's destigmatize talking about mental health. And I do that by just role modeling. You know, I've struggled and I do struggle with my own issues. By the way, of course I do. And so does every single person listening, whether or not they understand them or have noticed them. Like, welcome to being human is part of it. It's like, you're going to have aches and pains physically. You know, I'm 53. Trust me, it's really different after 40. It's really different after 50. But you can do things about it. You can't solve it. It's going to be a little creaky when I wake up and get out of bed in the morning. But you can do things to mitigate and improve, and you can get ahead of it. So my team knows that I struggle with an eating disorder. My team knows that I struggle with, you know, obsessively negative thoughts around the food choices I make. My team knows that I struggle with some aspect of body dysmorphia. You know, if someone were looking at me, I understand that they wouldn't see an obese person that looks gross. Logically, I understand that. But there are times that when I look in the mirror or I think about me, that is what I see. And it's really negative and it's really unpleasant. And when I'm doing well and I understand it and I utilize the things I've learned, okay, so I have some negative thoughts, but they don't have to disrupt my work. When I fall off of effectively managing it, I'm less productive. You want me to be looking at a spreadsheet, analyzing a strategy, listening, learning, and yet I'm just sitting there regretting deeply what I ate during that break at the seminar that I'm speaking at or listening at, and it distracts me. So I tell this stuff to my team. Who cares? If I broke my leg, I would tell my team. If I showed up on crutches, my team would know. Several years ago, I had a brain injury, got a concussion, TBI, and that really introduced me to and sent me on a journey. It was pretty scary. And I saw this connection between the physical damage to the brain resulting in the mental damage. You know, depression and anxiety and sensitivities are these like really natural common symptoms of the physical damage of a concussion. So people seemed like, oh, I tore my ACL, you know, playing football. And I'm getting surgery, and they'll talk about the meds they're on. They'll talk about the surgeon, and they'll show you the knee brace. And I learned to say to people, yeah, let me tell you about the concussion and the anxiety that I have now, the sensitivity to light, and the deep worries that I have now not going to be able to be the dad I want to be. So you normalize it, you talk about it, then you work with your team to, you know, I love this phrase, like building scaffolding around the topic. I think that's like a new contemporary buzzword. I think it's really effective. And so for me, the scaffolding around mental health at work is talk about it, destigmatize it, and then add in systems. So for us, we, everybody at orientation, hourly employees, salaried employees, they download an app. That app we provide to them free, and it provides as much mental health coaching via text or video with licensed practitioners, and it's free to our employees, and it is free to their immediate family members. Because if I want the prep cook to be highly efficient today, and she or he has a teenager who's suicidal, I need to help with the suicidal teenager, or I'm not going to have a productive prep cook. And so is it my place as a business leader? Yeah, I want my business to be profitable. So you don't have to have a big heart. You don't have to come at this. You don't have to be liberal. You don't have to care about people. You don't have to be on the left or the right. You don't have to wear any of these labels. You don't have to be an advocate, a practitioner, a zealot, or any of these things. You don't have to be save the world. You can just care about profit. Or you can also happen to care about the people. But I love to emphasize that any business person should be getting to this conclusion. For any parents out there, we all know you're only as happy as your unhappiest child. So as an employer, why wouldn't I help people with their unhappiest child? And so, Michael, it's the same reason why I'm writing and talking about menopause. Yeah. Like, I saw that my concussion was this convergence of physical and mental health. And it taught me that mental health is just part of health. And then as I learned about menopause, I'm a man. I can't experience it myself. I don't know what it's like, but I can learn about it and I can ask questions and I can listen. But here's what I know for sure. More than 50% of my employees are female. 99% of them will experience menopause at some point in their life. I'd say 100%, but someone would like point out some, anomaly. So let's just go with that. So if more than 50% of my people, 99% of them will experience this thing, and this thing will affect how they think, how they feel about themselves, how they engage with others, their ability to concentrate. And by the way, there's huge varying ranges of how menopause affects women. I only know this because what I read and what I learn. But why wouldn't I learn about it? Why wouldn't I normalize the conversation? Why wouldn't I help educate it at work? Our culture is going to create long tenure. People are going to work for us for a long time. I have people that we hired at 23 and they've been with us and now they're 40. And so... If that person is a female, perimenopause could be on the horizon. For some women, it happens younger. For some women, it happens at a later stage, but it's coming. And so what's perimenopause? Oh, it's something that's going to happen to me. I should know about. And so, of course, it's a business conversation. And if generally people climb the ladder in companies and that takes time. So as women are running companies and on boards and in C-suites, you could make a case that menopause is even more relevant because more of the women running and leading, simply because it takes time, right? Even when you start your own company, they start little. So I've had some haters say to me, like, stay in your lane. What are you talking? You're crazy talking about menopause. And my answer is, don't you want to manage the P&L? Don't you want a high-performing company? So there's some great books out there. the Menopause Manifesto is a great book. Jen Gunter, probably Dr. Jen Gunter. So it's fun to learn about it and talk about it. Destigmatize it. Invest in systems for your people. Provide the apps. Get a therapist on speed dial. We've got a psychiatrist on speed dial. I can get my people fast appointments. It's really hard to get mental health appointments in the U.S. So I build that network proactively. Spanish-speaking providers, English-speaking providers, men, women. You know, people want to see all sorts of different therapists. But not every therapy isn't what everybody needs. You know, psychiatry isn't what everybody needs. Lots of people do. I think people need colleagues to say, how are you? And really mean it and listen. And then when they see that someone isn't doing well, they say, hey, let's sit down and talk about it. Or let's grab our boss. You know, the company cares. It's amazing when you just build a culture. So those are some of the things that we sort of bundle in to how we operationalize caring about and prioritizing mental wellness.
Well, there's no doubt about you just don't really care about it. You're living it and you're doing it, and you talk about systemizing it. That's where it's really has an effect, because of course, individually, it's sometimes hard to reach everyone. But it's a really interesting thing you said before I grabbed, because actually my next question was actually about the industry, because you were very vocal about that. And you said, some people say, why the hell are you actually talking about, you know, menopause? Is that your business? And you say, it's like, yeah, it's the P&L. Of course, it's my business. But like, how do you see the whole mental health conversation now evolving in the hospitality industry? Because I can remember in my younger days, it was just about toughing up, you know, it's hard, just get on with it, you know. If you can't manage it, if you can't go through it, it's not for you, you have to find another place, you know. We all touched those places or met those bosses on the way.
The business, you know, years ago, I think used to be a lot more sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And that can be fun at the time, I can acknowledge, but that can lead to some of its own problems. I think there's a bit less of that now in the business is an intentional party. And now I think there are more people struggling with stress and anxiety. By the way, that's not, I think, look at the statistics. This is crystal clear. The rates of anxiety, depression, OCD, mental health disorders are climbing. You know, I can only speak to the US. That's the data that I study, but those rates are absolutely climbing. And this isn't just because we're better at diagnosing it and seeing it. This is for a variety of reasons. Yeah. So now I think that more often the booze and the drugs are people self-medicating. Rather than getting into the booze and the drugs for the party, they're looking to the booze and the drugs and the edibles as the escape. You know, they don't sleep well. And so they reach for the edibles, and that helps them sleep. Well, it helps them fall asleep, but it doesn't help them get quality sleep, right? They feel more anxious. They feel anxiety. They feel the stress. If they don't work in a place where they can talk about it and they don't have any scaffolding of what to do, they reach for the bottle. And in our industry, you know, the bottle is always closer. The drugs are probably always closer. And so the self-medicating part is probably even more prevalent in our industry. But I would make a point here that our industry is easier to see it in, you know, famous chefs get, you know, restaurateurs or chefs can be higher profile nowadays, and people can be seen, and then their collapse can be seen. But I don't, Michael, we could be talking about any industry, yeah, right? And people have these struggles, and the booze and the drugs are never far away. I mean, I don't know. I'm not a teenager anymore and I'm not young, but you know, people still say everybody's, you know, the drug dealer is a text message away. And in the US now, the cannabis store is, you know, within 2 miles and it's legal. And so is the liquor store. So more than ever, we need to build a scaffolding of let's be able to talk about it. Let's be able to notice it. And then let's have some simple steps that companies can offer. And let's not think that it's like send them to HR. I had someone ask me a question from the audience in a presentation last year, and they said, well, I'm worried about, you know, the legal implications. We've always been taught, you know, you can't cross these lines. You got to send them to HR. You can't talk about this. I said, that's fine. There's legal risk in everything we do. But how are you going to feel when you lose an employee to suicide because you were worried about the legal risk of talking about it?
Mm.
That's asinine. You're afraid of the wrong thing.
Mm.
What, you're afraid of the lawsuit of being sued because we consistently bring up these things that can affect people and hurt them in their personal lives? And maybe a manager can mishandle that conversation and someone can feel uncomfortable. And now there's a lawsuit. Okay, you're afraid of that. Why aren't you afraid of losing someone to suicide? Why aren't you afraid of low productivity? Why aren't you afraid of turnover? Why aren't you afraid of the employees quitting because they don't feel cared about? Why aren't you afraid of all of the lost productivity because people miss work? They call in sick. Yeah, they are sick. They've got such depression and anxiety, they can't get out of bed that day. So they'll tell you they've got a cold, right? It costs you money. So, I know my tone of voice here gets a little annoyed, and I shouldn't be annoyed, and I'm not judgmental. I understand the historical business stigma. And so I should try to just be painting a path that, okay, let's identify the hurdles. And the systemic hurdles about why we think we can't talk about some of this stuff in the workplace. Then let's try to create a bigger context around value. Let's build confidence in systems. And I promise you it works. I'm running a company with almost 1,500 people. It works. We perform better because we do this. And so it really works. It matters. It makes a difference.
And in that context, then, and what would be your, you know, number one advice for, you know, business leaders could listen into this, or they hear your story from somebody else? What should they do in their business? What is like the number one thing they should do?
Sit down with your vice president of operations or your chief operating officer or your director of operations or yourself, if that's you. Right? Small company, big company. And don't invite your HR person to the conversation. HR people are wildly valuable and they play a big role in what I'm talking about. But I would say the first step is sit down and say, let's make our list right now, the top 10 things that we're going to talk about as the lead operators in the company. And, you know, in a restaurant, right, it's going to be something about service and something about hospitality and something about loyalty and something about training and something about make that top 10 list. And then whatever is 10th on the list, push it to 11 and make number 10 operationalizing mental health. Just have that conversation. Start there. And then what it leads to is questions. What does that mean? How do we do that? But if you can start with make it an operational topic, we'll talk about the fish of the day and where that fish is coming from and the flakiness and the flavor of the new sauce. And we'll talk about how we decarbonize pans with this new cleaning product. And we'll talk about performance and we'll talk about attendance. Let's talk about wellness. Let's talk about mental health. Let's talk about elite performance. It's all one operational conversation. I think that is the place to start. And then there's books to read and there's folks to ask. And, there's things to look at on YouTube. There's my stuff on my site. I think I'm just one of a growing number of people who are operators talking about, you know, I've got a whole 10-step operational playbook of that folks can follow. But that's my, you asked me for simple advice. I went on, but I hope I can, I guess, just make that point of bring it into the operations conversation and then grow from there.
Yeah, and I love that because then you make it part of your everyday life of the business. Any other book you mentioned, the Menopause Manifesto, is there any other book on mental health you think that's important that the audience start out with or maybe expand their knowledge with?
There's an author, she's a speaker as well. Her name is Maura Ahrens, and her book is The Anxious Achiever. I love this book. I love the tagline of, you know, it's The Anxious Achiever. Turn your biggest fears into your leadership superpower.
Mm.
And so while a lot of what I've probably talked about today is how leaders can, you know, address this in their whole company, it starts in the mirror. And so that's why for me, I'm working on the impact of my brain injury. I'm working on my dysregulated nervous system. I'm working on my sleep hygiene. I'm working on my breathing. I got to work on me. And then I think share that to help others work on them. And then we work collectively. Maura's book is the reminder. Again, you got to work on your own leadership. And so if your anxiety and your fears hold you back, she's got some really great ways in her book to harness that and learn about that. And I love her courage to say that you can turn your biggest fears into your leadership superpower. That's a courageous statement.
Yeah.
And so she's well worth, you can follow her online and follow her on her website. Again, this is not a paid sponsorship. I think she's fantastic. And so I'm happy to share her stuff.
We'll put those two books, Stephanie, in the show notes and also the 1 Minute Manager for you guys that hasn't read that. Last question, Dan, is the question around mental health you wished I've asked you? And what would that question be and what would be the answer?
Maybe I would say you could have asked me how I define mental health.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose my answer would have been I simply define it as health and I work on it from a proactive wellness standpoint, so that I don't always have to see it in myself and others as something that we react to. We can get in better shape so that when we misstep and twist our ankle, there's less damage.
And recovery is quicker, I guess. So
recovery is quicker. The negative ripple effects are smaller. And so framing mental health as health and understanding there's lots that we can do to build our resilience, build our vocabulary and our understanding. So when the tougher stuff hits us, we're a bit tougher. And we're also comfortable being vulnerable and damaged, so that we can get back to wellness.
That was absolutely brilliant, Dan. Thank you so much for this conversation. If people want to reach out to you, where is the best place to do so?
Easy on my website, dansimonsays.com. You can email me through there. LinkedIn is a great place. I love the conversations on LinkedIn. And that's, you can find me at Dan Simon Says. And I'm on Instagram as well. And some of my stuff is up on YouTube. And so basically at Dan Simon Says is the place you can always find me.
Great, great. Thank you so much, Dan, for coming here, sharing this very, very important topics. And hopefully, I'm sure you have inspired a lot of people to think and reflect on how they approach that for themselves. And if they're a leader of a business, how can they actually do this better or even start implementing some of these things into their operational day-to-day life? Sending you and the team power and energy.
Thank you so much for having me. Thanks for creating a platform where we can spread the message.
I really appreciate that you're listening in. So if you enjoyed today's conversation, please share with others, rate it or give it a review, or subscribe to one of our channels, which all can be done via the website hospitalitymavericks.com. I believe that reading books is key to become a great leader. So I've helped you with a curated list of some of the books that have impacted the guests here on the show and myself over the years. Find it on Hospitality Mavericks website, hospitalitymavericks.com, under the reading list. A big thank you to BizSimply for supporting us, bringing great insights, strategies, and tools to help leaders to become better every day. Check them out at BizSimply.com, on their social at BizSimply or BizSimplyHQ. You can also email them directly at podcast@BizSimply.com. If you have any ideas and feedback for the show or other thoughts, reach out to me via LinkedIn or my email, michael@hospitalitymavericks.com. I'm Michael Tingsam, and you've been listening to the Hospitality Maverick podcast show. Be Maverick.